WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We have arrived at our last installment of this month's Full Bio. All week we've been discussing the life and work of Lorraine Hansberry. Today we'll hear about how Hansberry used her fame in the early 1960s as the first black woman playwright produced on Broadway and the only black playwright up until then to win the New York Drama Critics Circle Award for A Raisin in the Sun. She was featured in magazines like The New Yorker, where she explained how her life had changed. She told the reporter, quote, "It's just incredible. I had the phone number changed and gave it to roughly 12 people. Then I get a call from a stranger saying, 'This is so-and-so of the BBC.' It's the flush of success." Thomas Wolfe wrote a detailed description of it in You Can't Go Home Again. Hansberry sat for TV and radio interviews, including this Q&A with Studs Terkel.
"And I know this is late at night here at home, and I'd suggest people read the current issue of The New Yorker. And you can find there, too, the graciousness in Miss Hansberry and the tremendous demands. What about success, this little goddess success? What does it do to you? It obviously deprives you of privacy to something. Well, right now it does.
Yeah, it does.
This one moment here.
It does, except that it's wonderful. It's wonderful, and I'm enjoying it. I think it's important. I think there comes a time when, you know, you pull the telephone out and you go off and you end it. But for the time being, I'm enjoying every bit of it. I've tried to go to everything I was invited to. I shouldn't even say this on the air, but so far I've tried to answer every piece of correspondence I get, which, as I said in the piece, gets to be about 20 and 30 pieces a day at this point. But this, I don't have the right to be very personal about the reception to this play, because I think the reception to this play transcends what I did or what Sidney Poitier or Lloyd Richards or even Philip Rose or any of us connected with it. I think what it reflects at this moment is that at this particular moment in our country, as backward and as depressed as I, for instance, am about so much of it, there's a new mood. I think we went through 8 to 10 years of misery under McCarthy and all that nonsense, and to the great credit of the American people, they got rid of it, and they're feeling like make new sounds, and I'm glad I was here to make one.
Lorraine Hansberry spent the last years of her life as an advocate for civil rights and black freedom, and she worked with her friends like James Baldwin, even making her case to then-Attorney General Bobby Kennedy. During this time, she was ill, very ill, and was not informed of her actual affliction, pancreatic cancer. And even though she was in pain, she continued her work. Famously, in May 1964, months before her death at just 34 years old, Hansberry spoke to a group of teenagers who had won a creative writing contest in New York City, where she told them, quote, "You are young, gifted, and black. In the year 1964, I, for one, can think of no more dynamic combination that a person might be." Her friend Nina Simone would go on to immortalize Hansberry in song. For our final installment of Full Bio, here's my conversation with Dr. Suika Colbert, the interim dean of Georgetown College at Georgetown University and author of Radical Vision, a biography of Lorraine Hansberry. let's talk about life after Raisin in the Sun. So after all the accolades Lorraine Hansberry received, she was commissioned by NBC to write a screenplay in quote-unquote honor of the centennial of the Civil War. And she writes something called The Drinking Gourd. I understand that it never actually made air. How did she go about creating this script and a story about enslaved people? And how do we see her vision in the script?
So Hansberry writes about going to the South to visit her grandmother, her mother's mother, and that being some of her first introduction to the history of slavery. And she begins to think about the history of slavery and its impact on Black folks as a child, and understand, she talks about this in the book she co-writes with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. The book is called The Movement. In the introduction, she talks about Black people's freedom movements beginning with slave insurrections and spanning until the modern day civil rights movement. And so when Hansberry says the movement, she's talking about this, you know, 400-year history of insurrection and abolition. And so The Drinking Gourd is a piece of a longer thought process that she's having. And I wish it had been aired because it might have changed the trajectory of Black film around slavery today. But one of the important takeaways from the film is there's a moment in the screenplay where the main character Hannibal is mutilated because he has learned to read. And so the overseer decides to blind him. And in the screenplay, instead of showing the mutilation, which might happen in a contemporary film about slavery, Hansberry has the camera focused on the overseer. And so the violence is ascribed to the overseer and not to the Black person. And I think that that is just one example of many of how Hansberry was asking us to see slavery differently, in this case via camera angles, but also in the story that she wanted to tell.
She had another play on Broadway called A Sign in Sidney Brustein's Window. The setting is a Bohemian couple in New York City. It was not well received. What was the criticism of this play?
Critics thought that the play was not as neatly resolved and as well made in terms of, you know, being as tightly woven together as A Raisin in the Sun. I also think that critics were not ready for the writer known for this Black domestic drama to be writing about white folks living in the village. And, you know, that, but both of those contexts were Hansberry's world. So Hansberry lived amongst white folks and queer folks in the village in the 1950s and 60s. And she also grew up in Black community and lived in Harlem at one point when she was living in New York. So both of those were part of her world, but I don't think that critics were ready for Hansberry to be talking about the aspect of her adult life and the community that she lived in there. I also think that in many ways, Sign is more esoteric than Raisin in the sense that Hansberry is having the characters talk about culture and philosophy in ways that are happening in her world at the time, but it's definitely not the kitchen sink drama that is A Raisin in the Sun in the same way. Although it is a domestic drama and it's set mostly in a domestic space, the conversations are primarily philosophical rather than everyday conversations. And I think that that informs the reception of the play. But at the same time, it's again stunning that given all of that, given the reception, that the play continues to be produced.
My guest is Sawika Colbert. The name of her book is Radical Vision, a biography of Lorraine Hansberry. It is our choice for full bio this month. You write that she used her fame to transition from writer to public intellectual in the early 60s. What groups did she work with? In what capacity? What did she want to accomplish?
So Hansberry has a collaboration with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. She also, when she helps to produce this book called The Movement, which tells the story of SNCC alongside the story of Black people's freedom struggles. So SNCC is founded in 1960 and the book is published in 1964. But she also, you know, raises money for CORE and other civil rights organizations to help support their work. And she also famously participates in a conversation with Robert Kennedy in response to the Birmingham campaign and Robert Kennedy's request that Jimmy Baldwin help him figure out how to respond to the students' uprisings in Birmingham. And, you know, Baldwin writes about in an essay called Sweet Lorraine how Hansberry leaves that meeting frustrated. But one of the things that she says in reflecting on that meeting is that it was her goal to let the attorney general know that he should not be looking for answers from the Black intelligentsia, but he should be looking for answers from the students in the streets. And so one of the things that Hansberry has taught me as a spokesperson, well, you know, what does it mean to be a spokesperson? What does it mean to learn from history? It means to draw attention to our connectedness and how Black freedom requires that all Black people get free. And so for Hansberry, she saw her fame as an opportunity for her to speak, to be in spaces of privilege, but not to then be a power hoarder, but rather to use that as an opportunity to redistribute power to everyday Black folks on the front lines of freedom struggles, the youngers of the world who were just trying to carve out more space for their dreams in a day-to-day fashion.
I have to ask about that 1963 meeting. So there is Attorney General Robert Kennedy with James Baldwin, Harry Belafonte, Lorraine Hansberry. How did he react to this meeting?
So he was frustrated as well. He couldn't believe, there was one point in the meeting where Jerome Smith, who was a civil rights activist, expressed to Kennedy that he would not fight, he would not serve in the U.S. military, given the U.S.'s inability to provide civil rights for its citizens. And Robert Kennedy was surprised and shocked by that. And all of the leaders in the room didn't understand why Kennedy could not understand Black folks' reservation around serving in the military and or other types of civic duty, given the history of racialized violence. And it really shows you this disjunct that occurs between World War II and the civil rights movement, where, you know, Hansberry's mentors, W.E.B. Du Bois and others, were invested in the Double V campaign. This idea of victory at home would mean, victory abroad would mean victory at home. So victory in World War II abroad would mean more civil rights at home. And they had learned the limitations of that vision. It didn't result in greater freedom at home. And so now this new group of young activists were saying, you know, we require you to give us more access before we're giving you anything else. And I think that Robert Kennedy was surprised by that, but given history, it's astounding that he was.
The name of the book is Radical Vision, a biography of Lorraine Hansberry. It's our choice for full bio. We're speaking with Soeika Colbert. You write that she came to understand freedom was a process rather than a destination. For Hansberry, what was her process?
Hansberry wrote almost incessantly, which is surprising given how little of her work circulates and is published today. But I think that one of the gifts of her archives that you see how much she wrote in such a short life, and such, you know, having died at the age of 34 before her 35th birthday. And so part of her freedom practice was her writing. But then it was also using her access and participating in what we might consider as more prototypical political activism, giving speeches, participating in sit-ins, donating to different civil rights organizations. She did all of that work. And some of the most profound expressions of her political vision occur in her speeches. But I think that it's also important to note that they emerge through her artistic work as well.
In the 60s, before her death, she has divorced Robert Nemiroff at this point. But as you said, they're sort of intellectual soulmates. And she moves out of New York City to Croton-on-Hudson to a house she names Chitlin Heights, which makes me laugh. Why do you think she named the house that?
I think, you know, Hansberry had a wicked sense of humor. And, you know, so I think it's a play on Wuthering Heights. It's also, you know, drawing attention to her moving to this white area and bringing, you know, her Black presence to it. And her taking up space in a community where she's trying to carve out space for herself to think and write. And so she moves to, she still has a the apartment in New York, and she'll go back and forth and visit Robert Nimroff, even though they're no longer romantically together. But she buys the house so that she can have some breathing room and some space to think. And so it's both, you know, the naming is both a riff on how she's occupying this new space and also what she wants to bring to the space.
At what point did Lorraine Hansberry realize she was ill?
She knew that she was, or she first starts feeling sick in 1961. But one of the tragedies of the time period in which she was living is that she was never told that she had cancer. It was a secret that was kept from her. And you know, this was apparently the practice at the time because of the sexism. And so Hansberry, you know, starts feeling sick, and she collapses in 1963 in pain and spends 10 days in the hospital in April of 1963. And then, you know, subsequently is sick until she passes in January 1965. But again, she's never told, even when she's hospitalized in 1963, that she has cancer. She just thinks that she has ulcers. And so she writes about that in her journals and kind of, you know, sometimes says that she doesn't know she's going to be able to withstand the pain of these ulcers because it's so debilitating at times. What she thinks are ulcers, but what we know is cancer.
She dies at 34 years old. Her funeral is at a church in Harlem. 700 mourners assembled. At that funeral, how was she remembered?
Oh, she was remembered, I think, more fully as the visionary and the light that she was. It's lovely to see the reflections both of her at the funeral and also the people that are assembled. So Ozzie Davis talks about Hansberry and Malcolm X, who share a birthday, having a falling out where Malcolm X accuses Hansberry of being untrustworthy because she's married to a white man. But then ultimately they're able to mend fences, and Malcolm X attends Hansberry's funeral, even though he is in hiding at the time because of death threats. And so in the middle of a snowstorm, Malcolm X comes to her funeral to pay homage to her, even though it might cost him his own life. And so Malcolm X is there, Ozzie Davis, who Hansberry knows from acting in A Raisin in the Sun, who becomes a close friend, Diane Sands, Sammy Davis Jr. I mean, the list goes on and on. But Paul Robeson delivers a eulogy. Nina Simone sings. A dear friend of hers, Nina Simone, sings at the funeral. So it's really an opportunity to celebrate the life and legacy of someone who transformed many of the aforementioned people's lives.
Yeah, she's inspired so many other works of art, including the song Young, Gifted, and Black by her friend Nina Simone. What would you like people to remember Lorraine Hansberry for?
I think there are a couple of things. You know, Nina Simone famously writes in her own biography that, or autobiography, that Lorraine Hansberry radicalized her. And so the title of the book and what I want people to take away is that when we meet, what I mean by radical is that Hansberry thought that through our daily actions, any person could transform the world, could transform their existence, and that it's through those daily actions that you build the building blocks of these greater historical changes that happen. So even, you know, her father's court case is a building block that ultimately leads to, you know, housing desegregation and the Voting Rights Act almost, you know, two decades later, the huge civil rights victories that happened in the 60s, the building blocks of them are being laid in the 40s when Carl and Nanny Hansberry are doing their work. And so Hansberry understood these things as being interconnected as part of a larger movement. And so the day-to-day things that we do to resist racism may not result immediately in the huge scale historical change that we want to see, but they're important because they're laying a foundation for that work to come. And that is the radicalism that she was talking about, of transforming our material conditions on a day-to-day basis to create the foundation for the change we want to see in history.
The book is called Radical Vision, A Biography of Lorraine Hansberry. It is by Soweka Colbert. Thank you so much for spending the week with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. This has been a pleasure.
Once again, thanks to Professor Suika Colbert for this in-depth conversation about her book, Radical Vision, A Biography of Lorraine Hansberry. It was our choice for full bio this month. The entire series will be available via our podcast stream this weekend. A shout out to our engineer, Jason Isaac, and associate producer, Jordan Loft, for the post-production. And in honor of Ms. Hansberry, whose birthday was this month, let's go out on a little Nina Simone in honor of Lorraine Hansberry.
Just begun. When you feel in real love, yeah, there's a great truth that you should know. When you're young.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.